first half, second half, like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best bet, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together. Putting the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome back to another episode of Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are coming to you on Monday, June 10th, 2019, just less than 48 hours away from the Rapids opening game of the 2019 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Holding the High Line is partially brought to you by Denver Post. Head on over to denverpost.com/HTHL, all lowercase, for a special deal on their digital content. My good friend, Rabbi Mark Goodman, you are tired, but I assume have to be in good spirits because the Rapids are no longer bottom of the MLS Western Conference.
11th is beautiful, baby. Yeah. No, I also want to double plug the Denver Post because Matt failed to mention that the most important part of the Denver Post is me, that I write for the Denver Post. No, you can also catch Jake Shapiro, who is the beat reporter for the Rapids. Mark Kisla, columnist Mark Kisla, did a surprise column on the Colorado Rapids this week, which is a pretty amazing thing. Also, if you want all the really good weather coverage, local politics, and maybe the best cannabis reporting by any major paper in the United States, it's all right there at the Denver Post, people. Just go click.
Mark, how dare you bring up a certain commercial product on a podcast named Holding the High Line that was intentionally brought about as a name out of the triple entendre that existed because of it?
Don't you love that? I mean, it's some people have started tuning in well after the first episode when we explained our dumb name, but like, you know, I love the concept of a triple entendre. We may have invented the concept. Like, nobody else has ever really tried to pull the triple Lutz of the entendre world, where it's both high line because it's a soccer reference, it's high because it's 5280, and it's high because we are high on the marijuana. Although me and Matt don't smoke. Like, we're the lamest podcast hosts of the Colorado ilk that you could ever find.
Right, quick, write down triple entendre, and then we'll figure out after we're done recording who has the better lawyer friends, and then we'll copyright that before the podcast comes out.
Oh, it's me, my father, my aunt, my
boom. Aunt,
we're all attorneys.
This is how we're getting rich off of this podcast, Mark. It's not the deal with the Denver Post. It's not our Patreon page. Boom, copywriting. All right.
It's lawsuits to people who use the phrase triple entendre.
It's the only way you make money anymore. Either that or, you know, being Jeff Bezos. But, you know,
He's gonna blow it all on buying a small asteroid, apparently, though, right?
That's what's happening?
Well, isn't he doing a whole bunch of, like, really ridiculous spending on space? Isn't that his thing?
How do you buy an asteroid? Do they own space? Who is he giving the money to get ownership of the asteroid?
I'm sure you can buy an asteroid for like $50. The problem is you've got to spend like $12 billion to get there.
Oh, he's acquiring the asteroid, not just saying I own this asteroid.
We are just making stuff up at this point, Matt.
Okay, listeners, we did have a banter topic. We were going to talk about national team, but the U.S. women have not kicked up their World Cup campaign yet, so we're going to skip that for the moment. They kick off tomorrow or today, if you're listening on Tuesday, June 11th. And Mark, for me, the U.S. men's national team is just far too sad to talk about, and I don't want to go down that. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole that U.S. soccer Twitter has gone down in the last couple weeks that it regularly does that just annoys me. So we're going to talk about something happy. We're going to talk about something magical, and that, of course, is the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup.
We're huge fanboys of that. I also am waiting on the USMNT until the games mean anything, because like they're just totally meaningless until October of 2020, you know? So I'm just, I, you know, as a soccer fan who already covers MLS and USL, I just don't have extra bandwidth to be covering, meaningless soccer games that are going to give me that filled up the bile and make me irritated. I'm interested in covering the important games like the U.S. Open Cup, which is this really, to me, me and Matt are huge Magic of the Cup nerds. Like, we just love it. And, you know, my first Open Cup game was, I think, either 2013 or 2014. It was 2014, I think. But, like, I showed up at the stands at Dick's and, you know, you buy a ticket for, like, $5 and it's totally different than an atmosphere at an MLS game. You kind of sit anywhere you want. It's first come, first serve seating. There's very few concessions there. And the fans that are there at Dick's are the hardest of the hardcore. I mean, it's like usually the stands is like 3,000. And you recognize a lot of them. And if you don't recognize them, you will make friends immediately, because these are not like – you are not going to sit as I did at many times in my season tickets at Dick's on the east side. You're not going to sit next to someone who halfway into the game is going to say, so explain the offside rule to me, right? Like, that happened to me, I kid you not, a half a dozen times sitting on the east side. But, you know, you go to an Open Cup game and people can name – you know, the bench players for the USL team you're playing, and it's a great thing, Matt. Tell me about your kind of ethos of the Magic of the Cup.
Oh, well, I don't know if I have an exact memory of an Open Cup game, like the first one that I went to. That would have been back. This would have been late 90s with the Galaxy, and it would have been on some Wednesday night in the middle of the summer when I didn't have school the next day. So I'd have to go back and look at it and maybe find photos or a ticket stub, or I don't know if email existed at that point or if my dad had email to where he could have tracked that down, but that would have been it. The first real, I think, magical moment for me, was St. Louis FC's first year of existence, 2015. I was finishing up school at Wash U in St. Louis, and they played, they had an Open Cup game, first hosting the Des Moines Menace, and it was just this absolute gritty game, just drudged out. The Menace came in and were menacing and stuck in, and it took till extra time, like the stoppage time of the first half of extra time, so like the 115th minute, no, like the 105th minute, plus two in order for them to get a goal, and like the team was just being run ragged at that point, because they had a Wednesday USL game, and they come in and they're hosting Minnesota United of the NASL. At that point, the rumors were hot but not confirmed that they were coming into MLS, but they had Miguel Ibarra and they had Christian Ramirez and they had all these exciting players, and oh, they were a big NASL team, second division, and St. Louis FC were just first division, and it's a knock 'em down game, and it goes back and ends up 2-2 after extra time, and then Minnesota, and then they're doing the coin flip, and then I see the coin flip, and Brandon Barklage, who is the captain of the team, was a backup for the New York Red Bulls for a number of years, wins it, and then I can see the ref. I was so close, because it's a small stadium, that I could roughly read the lips of what the ref said. He said, do you want to go first, or do you want to pick which side we're going? And he just points straight to the corner where the St. Luligans were sitting, and Mark Pace makes the save on the first one on Miguel Ibarra. Brandon Barklage picks up the ball, puts it down, buries it, and they just beat Minnesota United, and that was fantastic. And then 2 weeks later, I was with the Luligans. I don't remember what section in the corner at then Livestrong Park, now Children's Mercy Park, for an absolute 1-0 crazy game against Sporting Kansas City, in which Sporting Kansas City said some of the supporters from the Cauldron said that's the loudest road support we've gotten from a non-Cascadia team in the history of this stadium. So it's a fantastic tournament. You know, like you said, Mark, the nerds are going to be out in force, and it's amazing some of the teams that you're exposed to and how much, you know, a team can get on the map because of what they do. 5 years from now, everybody's going to remember the Florida Soccer Soldiers for what they did against Charlotte Independence. I have a shirt in my closet that I could go get for you and show you right now, Mark, of the Villages SC, who
sure.
I want to say this would have been USL Orlando City, yep. 3-4 years ago, and then I remember they won their game after that against another USL team, but then they found out that they had a player who was suspended, right. Otherwise they were going to be freaking hosting DC United that year, which was just absolutely crazy. So I mean, like,
Last round, it was El Farolito, a team that's sponsored by a burrito stand in the Mission in San Francisco that I used to go to. It was like easily the fourth best burrito place that I went to in the Bay Area. No offense. Let's see. Cal FC had a famous run with Eric Winalda as their head coach. Mm-hmm. And then this year, Eric Winalda got offed by, while he was the coach of Las Vegas, got offed by, geez, what team was it? A team out of California.
FC Golden State Force, I think it was.
Something like that. I mean, just really amazing stuff, you know, just really amazing, amazing stuff.
Yeah, and, no, I talk to fans in other markets, Mark, and if, and like, at this point, everybody's heard of FC Denver because of what FC Denver has done in the U.S. Open Cup. So, you know, sure. You want.
And those are my favorite stories to write the last couple of years. I've written stories for different papers and websites about both FC Denver and about Harpos, which has just been, you know, doing amazing, wonderful things. And then, you know, on the other end of things, for every team that is the underdog with a bunch of amateurs that you know, knocks you off, there's the underperforming MLS teams, of which the Colorado Rapids have been the primary candidate, getting offed last year by an expansion side USL team called Nashville. And this year going up against New Mexico, which is also a USL expansion team of the last 2 years, I think, Matt. We'll talk more about them in a minute. But, you know, just this idea that the Rapids have been, their history in the USL, in the Open Cup is bad. And more importantly to me anyways, you know, I think there's a trophy case, where, you know, there are four possible trophies for a US soccer team to win. There's the MLS Cup, there's a Supporter Shield, there's the CONCACAF Champions League, and then finally there's the U.S. Open Cup. I personally put them all on roughly the same plane, although I put the Supporter Shield up a little higher than the Open Cup and the MLS Cup, and I probably put the CONCACAF trophy above all for obvious reasons. But like, if the Rapids want to start rounding out their trophy case, the Open Cup is next for them, and their history in the Open Cup is not very good. So they need to, like, kind of really put some energy into it and, you know, make it to the quarterfinals or make it to the semis this year to really show off for me.
No, I agree with you, Mark. And, you know, reality, depending on the year and how many teams are in it, you know, it's 5 to 6 games to get a trophy. You know, previously, you know, to win MLS Cup, you had to go through a whole regular season, be one of the better teams in MLS, and then go through, you know, anywhere from 5 to 6 playoff games that involve multiple road games and playing in cold temperatures, potentially. To win the Supporters Shield, you know, you got to win a 34-game marathon. To win Champions League, you have to have a fantastic season prior to win a trophy. And then you got to go up against play, you know, some fantastic teams in Mexico, probably. You know, for the Open Cup, you've got one gimme in playing a lower division team. Maybe you get two of those, and the rest of those are playing other MLS teams. You know, it's a 5-game, in terms of level of difficulty, still a regular season game, and that gets you a trophy that you get to add to the cabinet, and that books your ticket for Champions League. In that, it's one of the easiest paths. It's also one of the ones that requires, you know, it is the most team chaos of the four trophies.
Total team chaos.
Yes. Well, I'd say CONCACAF Champions League is, you know, hashtag CONCACAFing, which is a particular type of chaos that would be unique, but just generic team chaos, you know, you have to go with the Open Cup. And then I know the term that we always refer it to, Mark, I want to say it was when Bruce Arena was coaching, it would have been the New York Red Bulls or the LA Galaxy, and they had a midweek game at North Carolina Railhawks, who are now North Carolina FC in the USL. Then they were in the NASL, and he didn't show up, and he sent, I want to say, Kurt Anolfo, ironically, and just went with his first team and prepared for the game on Saturday. And like, Railhawks fans, you know, brought like, you know, like missing BPA, you know, out for Bruce Arena. I think one fan had a milk carton with Bruce Arena on it and just made a troll about how you're not taking us seriously. And then North Carolina puts their starters in and just absolutely wallops Bruce Arena's team. I want to say that was the origin of getting Railhawked, but you know,
right. And I think for the Rapids, that's an open conversation on Twitter and on Reddit with a lot of the fans about like, how should Connor Casey approach this game? You know, and there are a lot of folks out there who basically said, nope, put in all the starters, don't rotate anybody. I would say that that's a little overcooked. I mean, I think definitely, you know, if you're the backup goalkeeper, you expect that you're going to get to play in the U.S. Open Cup. And I also think that Clint Irwin is a very good and capable goalkeeper. So, but I think down the list, there's There's only a moderate amount of squad rotation that I would want to see out of the Rapids, in order to take on New Mexico. This is parenthetical or maybe just a parallel, but I just did the review for Pittsburgh Soccer Now on, their game. And, you know, this is me looking at this through the other side of the looking glass, which is that the Riverhounds are the underdog team. And my job was to preview the Columbus Crew. It's the first time all season I've previewed an MLS team for a USL opponent. The crazy thing, Matt, is, and I don't think the Crew are the only team that are like this, they look terrible setting up against this. They are missing three players who are off with the U.S. men's national team, one player who's off at the Africa Cup of Nations. They're missing three significant players due to season-ending injury, two players with niggling little injuries.
And Josh Steffen just left for Manchester City.
Zach Steffen just left, right? So, you know, one of the things that they're not doing well, they've only won one game out of the last 10. And the simple way to say why they've been decent this year is because, Pipa Higuain was doing very well at the beginning. Jossy Zardes would bang in a couple goals. Will Trapp could kick that long diagonal, and, Zach Steffen would, you know, go all out, nuts to save the ball. They don't have any of those four players tomorrow. So it's one of those things where, like, anything can happen in the U.S. Open Cup, especially when you either need to rest players or, like now, we're on an international break. So they're going to rest players, and there's going to be players who are missing for some teams.
Yeah, I guess the only other thing I'd add to that, Mark, on the squad rotation side is with the U.S. Open Cup, you are limited to five international players for the game day roster. So if the Rapids were going to do that, you know, you figure Lalas Abubakar, Tommy Smith, if you wanted to put Kai Kamara in there, you know, you're limited in terms of who else you're doing. You know, with Sam Nicholson in there, you know, Andre Shinyashiki is going to have to be in there. You're probably better off, you know, if you want to start, you know, Sam Anderson, you know, Sam Vines and Sebastian Anderson are probably in there. Cole Bassett is at worst probably your first midfielder off the bench. So there's some stuff to consider for Connor Casey. I spoke with him.
I was going to add, and I pointed out this in a tweet a couple weeks ago, that the Rapids basically burned some bridges that they could have had because they lost the ability to play a number of their younger players from Colorado Springs, because those guys all played with the Colorado Springs team, meaning they are something called cap-tied. They are stuck – sorry, not cap-tied. They are cup-tied to the team that they played in a cup match with. So Matt Hundley got into the game. Sam Rabin got into the game. And Abe Rodriguez, who's a goalkeeper, 16 years old, also got into the game. So they can't bring up any of those guys.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point, Mark. Let's talk Open Cup a little bit later, Mark. Shall we get to the fun stuff from Saturday night?
Review.
Listeners, this past Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, the Colorado Rapids played a soccer game, and for the fourth time in five, they were victorious by a score of 1-0. A fantastic run-up header from Kai Kamara off of a corner on an assist by Jack Price. Kai Kamara with some banter for one Aiko Parra, a former Sporting Kansas City teammate of his, who he had some pretty good jawing with after beating him on that. A couple of good counterattack opportunities for the Pids. You know, Sam Nicholson gets wide in a couple of opportunities. Andre Shinyashiki had some good moments, but kind of looked really angry to start the game. And then, honestly, Mark, it was a whole lot of nothing because the Rapids drew their line of confrontation, you know, just on their side of the center circle, and Minnesota couldn't really do anything on this one. You know, I barely noticed Angelo Rodriguez at all. I thought whether it was Jack Price or Tommy Smith, both of them kept, you know, Darwin Quintero absolutely in their back pocket. You know, Ethan Finley had a couple decent runs on Sam Vines, but he managed that. He had one shot that, you know, he could have gotten in on goal, but then he ended up putting that wide. You know, a couple nervy moments from both sides in the back as both sides were getting stretched and tried to create something. But I think very similar to the game against FC Cincinnati, where the Rapids, for the most part, let the opponent have the ball. They scored the goal early in the first half. They managed the result after that. The opponent just looked absolutely impotent. If you take away the salary, if I'm watching Darwin Quintero for the first time and I don't see his name, that's not a guy who I'm thinking was a best 11 player
right
a year ago, 18 months ago, and that's definitely not a guy who I thought was the starting attacking midfielder for Club America less than 3 years ago. I thought, you know, he was very, very poor. You know, you know, it was another game against a poor opponent, but ultimately one where the Rapids took care of business. Mark, what was your good thing from this past Saturday's victory?
Yeah, I mean, I think you said that all really well. I think the good thing for me is a little goofy in the sense that it's pretty rare as a pundit to come out and say something out loud and then for it to exactly come true. I'm just going to point out how rare it is to actually be right once in a while. So I'm just going to pat myself on the back for the moment that I had with Jeff Reuter last week, where we were talking and I kind of asked him like, hey, you guys set up in a counterattacking setup where you let the other team have the ball and then you try and, you know, win it midfield, strike quickly in transition, and then sit deep. The Rapids do that too. What do you think that's going to mean for this game? And basically it meant, well, either it's going to be all out chaos as both teams try to murder each other at midfield and then go on the break, or both teams are going to sit deep and it's going to come down to set pieces. And so the ability for me and Reuter to both kind of say like, oh, you know, that's possible. And then for that to basically be the game, the way the game was won, you know, sitting deep and set pieces was a nice thing to see. It's also nice to see that the Rapids are really doing well on set pieces. You know, I've seen in multiple games, especially since I get to watch the away commentary quite frequently on ESPN from here. You know, commentators are often left bewildered with the set piece corner kicks that the Rapids run. They like to run like a stack, just like an old school basketball. If you were ever a basketball coach, or if you ever watch, you know, it's like they put five players in a stack and then they all push forward and break. And, you know, some go front post and some go back post. And it's this very unique, way of setting up. And, you know, commentators are always like flummoxed by it. They're like, what's going on here? And it's nice to see that the Rapids are trying things on the training ground. They come to fruition. And they can eke out a 1-0 win on that and just defend and hang on. You know, a couple months ago, Matt, you know, holding an opponent to zero goals was like, we were just hoping they could hold them to two.
Yeah, no, well said, Mark. I'm going to give props to Kai Kamara. Had not scored a goal in a game the Rapids won. I think he only had one goal in a game where they got a result. I want to say that was the opening game of the season against Portland. You know, he was on a little bit of a drought and he comes in, I thought, played really well just over the whole of the 90 minutes, and obviously getting a goal. And then, you know, having that be the difference in the game, you saw the level of relief and level of joy that Kamara felt in post game and talking with him. And you can just see that he's completely bought in on this team. He's doing everything that he can. You know, he's trying to be a really good teammate. I think, you know, especially during the end of the run and how he's played now that the team's turned it around, I think that dispels, you know, any concerns you or I or some of the haters on Twitter had regarding whether or not he was going to come here and be a locker room cancer. He knows that he's working on limited time with how old he is, and he just wants to do everything he can to try and help the team win. The team's winning, and in part because of how well he's playing. On the other side of the ball, you know, I'll give some props to Lalas Abubakar, who I think has locked himself in, as the number one starting center back for the Rapids, and I thought had an absolutely fantastic game. And he had some really salient comments, that I talked about and that I included in my column for Last Word on Soccer, this week, talking about just the team getting their confidence back and the fact that he's bought into the team as well. You know, Kamara's on, maybe on borrow time just because of his age and he's only on a 2-year deal. Abubakar is potentially on borrow time because he's on a loan and who knows what that looks like. But the one thing that's certain for him is that if he starts, he plays well and he helps the Rapids get success, that's going to be good for him in the future. If Columbus Crew doesn't want him back, either the Rapids are going to want him. Either way, he's setting himself up to be in a better position club-wise at the start of 2020 than he was starting on the bench for Columbus at the beginning of this year. And, you know, he's here to win. He's not thinking, you know, he's not that roommate, you know, who's just, you know, moved in on a six-month lease, for example. You know, like, he's acting like he's actually bought the bedroom. So that's fantastic. And the other thing I'll generally talk about is just simplification. What's the thing that I've been harping on in terms of everything the midfield was doing in really the entire Anthony Hudson era, Mark, no matter the formation? role assignments and simplification. It wasn't clear who was doing what or why or how those things were working together. Connor Casey has absolutely simplified things. We're going to play a double pivot in the midfield. One guy's going to go forward. That's usually going to be Kellen Acosta. We're going to move the midfielders slightly up and have them play wide. They're going to track back at times to link up with the fullbacks. The fullbacks aren't going to bomb forward. We are going to be extremely difficult to break down up the middle. We're going to win the ball. We're going to get it away from our goal and upfield as quickly as I can, and guys are going to run. We talked about it last week with what the wingers are doing. It's pretty clear what Jack Price and Kellen Acosta, what their roles are in the midfield. They've simplified things so much. Everybody knows what they're supposed to do. It's predictable. It's clearly something they've practiced, and everybody is executing. And when you have all that going together, when you have everybody rowing in the same direction, you're going to be okay, even on a class 5 rapid.
I talked to someone in the Rapids front office this week about, you know, the changes that have been made. And one of the things that he said was Anthony Hudson was too precise and too in need of it being to be extremely rigid. He wanted his system to go a certain way, and fluidity was kind of choked out of it. And, you know, it's working better now that they don't have that. So that's one interesting observation. Back to what you said about Lalas Abubakar, there's a really interesting thought that I had. I mean, I think it's interesting. I don't know if the listeners will, but that there's a double-edged sword to Abubakar's performance this year. The better he does this season with the Colorado Rapids, the more his sale value is going to be inflated, and the more it's going to wind up costing them to acquire him full time for next year, which is kind of funny because you don't really want him to, like, you know, sandbag it and not play well just so that the Rapids get a sweeter deal on him. But the reality is, like, you know, unless something miraculous happens and Colorado can win almost all of their games the rest of the way and sneak into the playoffs, this season is building for next season. So Abubakar doesn't need to be the best player in Rapids history this year. And if he is the best player in Rapids history, it's only going to wind up costing them more money, which is going to hurt against the cap from the Rapids buying other players. So I also did some cap math today. I'm working on getting ready in a couple weeks for transfer season so that I can make some predictions and maybe reveal some inside information. But you know, as it stands right now, it looks like the Rapids have something along the lines of at most $490,000 in TAM. They probably have most of their GAM, which would be $400,000. I think they probably have $300,000 of it. And it's unclear whether they've spent any of what's called their discretionary TAM, which is $2.8 million. So there's money to spend at the window, and that money will still, you know, probably be there for next year's salaries, including, and transfers, including Abubakar.
Yeah, one last thing that I'll add on Abubakar, Mark. I remember, I want to say it was his debut. I want to say it was a loss against Vancouver. I believe that was Connor Casey's first game in charge as interim.
I think it was against RSL.
Might have been against RSL. Lalas Abubakar's debut with the Rapids. It was a game at home. The Rapids lost that game, and I got to speak with him post-game in media, and he just looked absolutely crushed. I don't remember any of the other players. Like, everybody was generally down, but he clearly wasn't desensitized from it in ways that some of the other players were. And you just saw that, like, he went out there, he played as hard as he could, and, like, he was emotionally devastated. He was crushed in ways that I think, other than Kai Kamara, I hadn't seen anybody else talking about it during the bad times. And you could tell that he was just absolutely devastated for it. And he was happy as can be, you know, after they ended up getting the win against Columbus Crew that he didn't play in because of the conditions of the interleague loan. He had a really good conversation, with head coach for the Crew, why am I blanking on his name right now?
Caleb Porter.
Thank you. Talking with Caleb Porter, and he said, you know, I've been watching, you're playing well, you know, I'm glad you're getting time. And I think he took that encouragement to heart. And, you know, Kai Kamara was absolutely happy, but, you know, anytime you asked him about the goal, he's like, man, I'm just glad we got a win. Like Kai Kamara could score zero goals the entire season. And if the Rapids win the treble with him as a starting forward, he's happy with that way more than he would for the Golden Boot. But Abubakar was just the happiest guy as can be on Saturday. You know, he's, you know, again, like, I'll say it, he's bought in. I think he is as putting down roots in terms of committed to this season as I think Edgar Castillo was last year. Whether or not his run of form leads to negotiations and potentially falling through, or, you know, a three-team trade with New England Revolution, we'll have to see on that front.
God forbid.
I'll start off with bad thing then, Mark. What the Rapids are doing, while it has been effective and it has worked, it's mostly worked against poor opposition. You talked about Columbus Crew being bad. Minnesota United were bad. FC Cincinnati are now bottom of the Supporters Shield standing. And what the Rapids are doing is pretty consistent, and it's relatively one-dimensional. And while it's worked and it's been effective, that in of itself is unsustainable. You know, there's now a pretty good amount of film on how the team plays under Connor Casey. There's going to be a 10-day break for Vancouver Whitecaps to figure things out, who will not be playing in Open Cup, because obviously they're a Canadian team. They play in the Canadian, in the Amway Canadian Championship, if I have that correct. So they're gonna have a bunch of time to scout them and see how the team actually plays. Eventually somebody is going to figure out how to beat them, or just, you know, the Rapids are gonna run into a team with two really good fullbacks who are gonna be able to win those duels against the Sam Nicholson, Andre Shinyashiki, Jonathan Lewis, etc. So, the Rapids, I think, can still be successful without being a possession-based team, but can they get those numbers up from about 40% possession to maybe like 50, you know, let's say 45, or maybe touching 50 at times, depending, you know, home and away average over the course of a period of time. Can they do that? And can they come up with another offensive weapon under that? I think, you know, if this team is just counterattacks and set pieces, you know, the U.S. national team made it to a World Cup quarterfinal doing that in 2002. So if that's it, if the answer is we're going to work a bunch on set pieces, Tommy Smith and Kai Kamar are going to eat, that's fine if that's the second option. But I think they need something else from the run of play. Maybe that's up the middle. Maybe that's a little bit more link-up play. Maybe that's getting the fullbacks involved. You know, the big question I have for this team right now, as good as probably everybody who's listening to this podcast feels about the team right now, is what happens when they go up against LAFC? How does LAFC or a Seattle Sounders or, you know, or an NYCFC, or I wanted to say Philadelphia Union, but they've already played Philadelphia. Let's throw Montreal in there because they're playing well as well. How do those teams play in terms of breaking down the Rapids when they have the ball? And what do they do to neutralize what the Rapids are doing well when the Rapids are in possession? That is a question that remains to be answered for me. Mark, any other bad things you have from the game?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to cheat a little and bend the question. You know, because of the way I'm now covering the Rapids as a columnist, I don't necessarily watch the games in the exact same way that I used to. I'm actually kind of taking in the totality of the Colorado Rapids experience from the week. So my bad thing is actually, Grant Wall came out today with an annual article that he does called the Ambition Rankings, which, like it or not, whether the, you know, ambition makes any sense or not, the Rapids were 24th out of 24 teams, which is, that's, you know, pretty harsh. To say that Colorado's ownership is less organized and clear about a vision forward than, say, the New England Revolution, who don't even have an actual soccer stadium to their name, and play on a stadium with football lines, throwball lines on it, is pretty damning. The only reason I think that Wall put the Revs above the Rapids was because they hired Bruce Arena and they look like maybe they're going in the right direction in terms of hiring people who know soccer pretty well. Colorado isn't
like,
quite there.
Like Kurt Anolfo joining as an assistant coach under Bruce Arena.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah. Kurt Anolfo is on staff. Oh my God.
That's a shame.
Well, Kurt's fine when he has Bruce Arena around it, but I'll stop using Kurt Anolfo as my personal punching bag.
Yeah, there are other managers in Major League Soccer who keep getting recycled and maybe don't deserve that chance. But Anolfo's one that should not ever get a head coaching chance again in this league. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. But you know, it goes back to an article that came out in The Athletic a couple weeks ago from Sam Stachel of the Rapids ownership and how much commitment they show to this team or how little commitment they show to this team. And it's worrisome, you know, and all fans have felt this way at times, that like the lack of investment in personnel at the high end, as on the in the front office, as Sam Stachel laid out, some of the concerns. Like one of the things that's laid out in both Wall's article and Stajkus's article is that the Rapids are working with a smaller scouting staff than any team in Major League Soccer. Matt and I have both experienced that they're working with a smaller digital marketing and communication staff than almost any team in Major League Soccer. You know, Matt and I have both experienced times when, I mean, I remember vividly last season when Atlanta United came to town and they brought, I think, somewhere between 8 and 10 traveling media people, which meant that their traveling media team was larger than the Rapids' actual media team, which is, you know, mind-blowing. And then when I went out to LAFC and saw their setup last year, I was also kind of dumbstruck by how shiny, professional, expensive, you know, over the top they were. You know, LAFC wants to be able to compete and stand with clubs like Bayern Munich and Real Madrid in terms of the shiny front office and the big stadium. And like, Colorado's not competing. You know, we're trying to keep up with Ibar, you know, like we're trying to keep up with Luton Town, you know, like it's, there's scales there that aren't good. So to finish the thought, this week, finishing 24th out of 24 teams on the ambition ranking was a kick in the, you know, what's in the yarbles. And I would like, even though the wins are going in the right direction and the attendance is going in the right direction, I would like to see some of the other aspects of the team going in the right direction too.
I guess the big thing that I'll have to close out this round here, Mark, last week, the Rapids leapfrogged over FC Cincinnati and are no longer bottom of the supporters shield standing. And this week with a win, they jumped over the Portland Timbers, albeit the Timbers have 3 games in hand on them. So they're no longer bottom of the Western Conference. So if we're going to take that, Mark, the Rapids have played 15 games. They've got 19 games to go in the season. So if the current track record holds, and in no way do I statistically predict it to be, the Rapids will finish 3rd in the supporters shield standing. I'm in no way guaranteeing that that's going to be happening, but I'm going to think positively since you were a little bit negative on there, Mark. So I guess, you know, on that note, it's, if nothing else, like, this team is in a great place mentally and in a increasingly better place physically in terms of what they're doing going into the Gold Cup break. Gonna see some squad rotation possibly in the game on Wednesday, but you know, pending, you know, a 2-0 drubbing like they had at Nashville last season, this team is flying high and has to be feeling great going into the Gold Cup break. Rest a little bit, get some guys healthy, regroup. Porik Smith probably doing some conversations as far as the coaching search is concerned, probably doing some little planning, at least, you know, what's the contingency plan for various things as far as the summer transfer window, and then hopefully going up and trying to get a result against Vancouver. And from a mindset standpoint, from a confidence standpoint, from a believing of they can actually do this, you know, we can, you know, let's just one game at a time, 1 week at a time has been Connor Casey's ethos. The team is in a much better position than they were 5-6 games ago, and Saturday night was the exclamation on the end of the sentence in this paragraph. We'll hope that the beginning of the second paragraph after the Gold Cup is in all caps and hopefully no bleeped out words. All right,
good stuff,
Mark. Let's take a head to the Open Cup game this coming Wednesday, June 12th, 2019, the Colorado Rapids will be hosting USL expansion side New Mexico United. New Mexico United is in their first year in existence, Mark. They play at Isotopes Park in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Depending on which surveying source I've been looking on based on Google Earth and some of the stuff that I have through work, Mark, the Isotopes Park is anywhere within about 200 feet plus or minus of being at a mile. Dick's Sporting Goods Park, the surface was surveyed at just over 5,200. So you've got, you know, potentially the team with certainly the third highest stadium in all of the US or Canada coming to the game on Wednesday. So they're potentially conditioned to altitude, maybe even a little bit more than the Rapids are. They're flying high at the top of the Western Conference, but they've had a couple bad results. They had a 1-0 lead on Oklahoma City Energy, and ended up getting a draw on this one and then absolutely blown out at home. Their first loss at home in their albeit brief existence, a 3-0 drubbing from Sacramento Republic, who are a very good, historically a very good team in USL. They have a handful of talent of USL journeymen and MLS journeymen. They have Devin Sandoval, who will remember very negatively from his time with Real Salt Lake. Former Rapids player Sam Hamilton is anchoring things at the back, and he's joined by their captain, Josh Suggs, the former captain of Colorado Springs Switchbacks, and then they have a plethora of other guys in the attacking front. Kavon Frater, who's their main striker, very streaky, winger, but he plays inside for the most part, who actually got a hat trick in the game that I saw New Mexico United play in league play at Colorado Springs Switchbacks, and then a couple weeks later, they got a 2-1 win in the Open Cup to now play the Rapids. Obviously, you're focused more on the Eastern Conference when it comes to USL, Mark. What do you see in this game? How does Connor Casey approach it? What do you see in New Mexico United?
I mean, the challenge that typically comes with playing lower division sides, I'll say something general since I don't have specific knowledge. Matt, you're way better on USL West than I am. I mean, this is the reality of a league with 40 teams in it, which is insane. They need to stop doing that, but that's another matter. No, they don't need to stop doing that. Having a big league is fine, but like, they really should have like two separate cups because, you know, the USL is just too big. Anyways, I'll just say a very general thing about Open Cup and lower sides versus higher sides. The thing that happens very often when a lower side takes on a higher side is that the lower side comes out with like, you know, methamphetamine levels of adrenaline coursing through their veins. And that first 25 minutes is just absolute managed chaos. Like, you are just trying to keep these Hulkamaniac, you know, charging out of their shirts dudes from just blowing right through the stratosphere because they're just charging around super amped up. The side piece of that is like, you know, the early red card is always a danger for that USL side. The other end of that is all these lower division sides tend to be really vulnerable from minute 70 on. So the key for individual personnel, tactics, it tends not to matter in these games. The thing that tends to matter is, you know, you need to, both teams need to want it. You need to come out and match their energy at least partially, but you need to prove that you're the more fit team and be the better team after minute 70. You have to be able to exploit them. So that's a tall order. You know, it's a tall order to be able to appreciate and handle the onslaught that you're going to face early and then be able to come on late.
Absolutely, Mark. With that, let's head on to my pre-recorded segment for Know Thy Enemy, where I talk with David Carl of The Curse. That is the New Mexico United supporters group. We do talk about where the origin of that name is, and he's also one of the hosts of The Curse Cast. With that, here's Know Thy Enemy. Mark will be back after that to talk about predictions for Wednesday. Welcome back, listeners, to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We've got a special U.S. Open Cup episode of Know Thy Enemy. I'm talking with the president of The Curse down in Albuquerque, New Mexico, to talk about all things New Mexico United with David Carr. David, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you having us on. We're pumped for the U.S. Open Cup and looking forward to making the trip up there to Denver.
Oh, wow. Super exciting. I'll have to give you guys some tips on what you guys can do while you are in, while you're in the Mile High City. But, first of all, New Mexico United at the top of the Western Conference in the United Soccer League. Some bad results recently. We'll talk about that in a bit, but you're a USL expansion team, in a lot of, particularly the MLS markets, we see being new to soccer and new to an MLS team. It's a lot of people maybe discovering the game for the first time or accepting local soccer for the first time, even if they might have a European club. What's the soccer culture in Albuquerque and Greater New Mexico like? And what's been the reception to the team in, you know, their first not even 3 months of play?
Yeah, the reception's been amazing, overwhelming, pick your adjective, if not unexpected, frankly. You know, we've got some soccer culture here in New Mexico. You know, we've had the men's and women's teams for the University of New Mexico, the Lobos. The men's team actually was just recently cut, unfortunately. But there's a big English Premier League fandom here. There's some Spanish League fandom here. And then we also have a USL League 2 team, previously PDL team, the Albuquerque Soul, that we've supported for quite some time down here as well. And then a brand new women's team as well in the WPSL, Albuquerque FC. So it's a soccer-loving community, and we've kind of likened it to, we've been told anyway, to give you an MLS, equivalent. A lot of people have asked me when we've done these interviews, you guys seem a lot like you're like Atlanta, Atlanta United. You know, you've kind of come into the league and kind of a sleeping giant. Nobody knew that you had a burgeoning soccer culture, and frankly, maybe we didn't either until this team came in and did all the right things, and it's been a hell of a reception. It's been a lot of fun.
Wow, that's absolutely fantastic. A pretty big bar to set as far as like your first year or first 2 years, in USL comparing to Atlanta, but I can definitely see that. On the club side, I guess I'm wondering if there's an inside joke as to what the curse is. I'm kind of sensing, you know, maybe like a Halloween, like Dia de los Muertos, you know, maybe even Coco reference here. You know, how did the supporters group talk about that? Talk about you being the president, what you guys do, you know, on game day and not in game day, and maybe, you know, how the name and the culture came into existence.
Yeah. So I'll start with the name there. So when the club first was announced a year ago, this past week, actually, there was a group of us, six of us, I think, in total, who got together and said, well, we want to put together a supporters group. And we met at a local brewery. And that's kind of the genesis of everything. And as far as the name itself goes, though, early in New Mexico's existence, when it was still a territory, not quite a state yet, the president sent over this Civil War hero, his name was Lew Wallace, and told him to go over there and be the governor, govern the new territory of New Mexico. And when he got here, things were rough. The weather was rough, the climate was rough, the cacti were rough, the animals, you know, everything was difficult, and everything was out to kill you. And he sent a letter back to his wife. It was a long-winded letter, but in part, it read, all calculations based on our experiences elsewhere fail in New Mexico. And so that is what has been dubbed the curse of Lew Wallace. That was the guy's name, the general's name. And so we figured there's two ways you can interpret that. Either you can interpret that as, well, everything here in New Mexico sucks. That's the way some people might interpret that. We decided to turn it on its head, and we decided to make it our own. And it's our way of saying all the things that work for you at home, all the things that work for you at your place, as soon as you cross our borders, they're not going to work anymore.
Okay, very, very well said. I imagine that maybe themes into some jokes about the home field advantage as well. So I guess, on that note, one quick question though. I actually have my roots in the USL. When I started writing and podcasting, on soccer, I was actually finishing up school in St. Louis, and I was there for the first year of St. Louis FC. And I've kind of seen this dichotomy, though I think it's improving in the USL, about just difference in level of quality of surface as far as teams playing in baseball stadiums. What's the field surface like and the sight lines like at Isotope Park?
The sight lines are great. There's not a bad seat in the stadium. The field is a little rougher, a little tougher, I think. It's a baseball stadium, as you said, and one that we'll be at for a few years to start off with before we hopefully get our own place. And you know, that's something that I think is in the works and will take a few years, obviously. But, I mean, think about it. You've got the AAA Albuquerque Isotopes who are playing there in between our matches. You know, they play a hell of a lot more games than we do, and it's their park. And so it's not just the fact that it's a baseball stadium and you need to move grass in and out, but combine that with the fact that we are a desert. You know, we were in Albuquerque. This is not, you know, back east where you've got some humidity, you've got some moisture in the air. We live in the desert, and we live at elevation. So it's tough for grass to grow here in general, much less the kind of playing surface that you would maybe expect at a top-level MLS or USL field, or even a minor league baseball field. You know, Albuquerque Isotope Stadium is a wonderful place. It's a wonderful place to see a baseball game, and it's a great atmosphere to watch a soccer game. It's fantastic. The surface is tough to grow, and the Isotopes are doing their damnedest to help us out with getting that surface, but the elements are against them when it comes to that.
Well said. Let's talk about the form. Obviously, New Mexico United started off really well. They've now obviously won two games in U.S. Open Cup. I actually had the pleasure of seeing Kevon Frater go absolute ham on the switchbacks in the league game, where I'm sure there were a number of cursed members. And I
was at that game as well.
Okay, we were a couple hundred yards away from each other. I would have been on the opposite side of the stadium, in the little press box area right at midfield, and you guys were in the corner. But I spoke to a couple of switchback season ticket holders who said that that was the best, that was the best away support in any game in the history of the Switchback. So really excited to see what you guys can bring as far as an atmosphere to GSG Park on Wednesday. But, some bad results of late. You know, you got the draw against Oklahoma City Energy that kind of felt like a loss. And then, you know, not too good on the weekend against Sacramento Republic. Talk about the evolution of the form and just where the team is as far as confidence going into Wednesday against, you know, their first game against an MLS side.
Yeah, I would say you kind of hit the nail on the head there. It's been a little bit of a dip in form lately. You know, they came out like a bat out of hell throughout the entirety of the first quarter of the season, you know, quickly shooting up the standings to first in the Western Conference, as you mentioned. And I don't think anybody outside of the, you know, 22 guys on the roster and the coaching staff expected that, which is fantastic. You know, we came in with expectations in a year, you know, we think we can be a playoff team. We know these guys. You know, we've seen them play at other USL and MLS spots, and we know the talent and the quality of guy that we have. So we're thinking, all right, these guys are our playoff team. You know, they can sneak into the playoffs, maybe a 7 or an 8 seed or something like that. And again, then they came out like a bat out of hell and seemed unstoppable. But as you're well aware, you know, nobody, unless you're, you know, the Invincibles, goes through an entire season unbeaten, and nobody goes through an entire season without a dip in form. It's to be expected. And it's been a little bit of that lately. You know, as you mentioned, the draw with Oklahoma City did feel like a loss. It always does when you drop points from a winning position. We scored first. And then, Saturday's matchup was not a good one. You know, we it was our first loss at home, 3-0 final. Didn't end well. A lot of frustration, I think, both on and off the pitch. But, you know, we kept a positive atmosphere there, and, it's a matter, I think, of a couple different things. It's been a lot of matches piling up on top of each other, as you're well aware. You know, we had 2 U.S. Open Cup matches, prior to this round. And then, you know, we've had a couple weeks in a row where we've had a Wednesday match and a Saturday match. So that's tough. That's one issue. The other is we've got some injuries, and one of them, I think is particularly key. That's to Josh Suggs, our captain. He anchors our back line. He's just been fantastic throughout the entirety of the year, and he's out with a knock right now. Will be for a few weeks. Unfortunately, will not be playing, as far as I'm aware, unless there's been some sort of update in the U.S. Open Cup match. So we'll certainly miss him. But I will say it's been a really good culture of next man up in the early going here for New Mexico United. You know, we have had some injuries, not just to Suggsy, but to guys like Devin Sandoval, who's one of our goal scorers. You know, we've had suspensions of Santi Moir and Kevon Frater, who are the 2 top goal scorers in the entire USL. And it's always just next man up when they're out. So that's been really positive. And I would be shocked if this dip in form stays around for long.
Okay. I guess on that note, let's talk about the actual roster. In hindsight, or you could build the narrative that New Mexico United has a good balance of USL journeymen like a Kevon Frater, who has been absolutely fantastic when healthy for you guys. And then certainly some of the guys with MLS experience. Rapids fans will have very negative opinions of Devin Sandoval, a former Real Salt Lake striker. And then obviously Josh Suggs, who, at least from all the people I know down in the Springs, have nothing but wonderful things to say about his time with the Springs. And then we will, of course, get to former Rapids Sam Hamilton. You kind of have this good makeup of, you know, maybe bench guys in MLS who had potential, they just needed to actually play, and then journeyman USL players coming into a right opportunity. Talk about the makeup as far as talent is concerned, and really how they've sort of come together, you know, as such a new team.
Yeah, I mean, we lead the USL in goals as a club. As I mentioned before, Kevon Frater is first in the USL in goals. Santi Moir second in the U.S. on goals with 10 and 9 respectively. So Coach Troy Lesane has put together a team with a lot of firepower. Add to that Devin Sandoval, who's got 6 of his own. Chris Weehan, who's got 3 and several assists. We score a lot of goals. Where we've struggled at least a bit is keeping the ball out of the net. It's been an issue at times. So, you know, we have, just to kind of throw a stat at you, we have more matches where we've given up 3 goals. We have 3 of those. Than we do shutouts. We have 2. And Cody Mizell, our goalkeeper, leads the USL in saves, partially because he's having a fantastic year and partially because we've had some issues on the defensive line. So there's definitely something to be said for that. But again, these guys have stepped up, and very rare has there been a time, when they're not at least fighting. You know, that 3-0 loss this weekend was kind of an anomaly, thus far in the season. Very much an anomaly. Again, our first home loss. But, overall, they've put together, as you said, some USL journeymen, some former MLS players. You know, Devin Sandoval, as you said, played for Real Salt Lake. He also played for Atlanta United too. Santi Moore came from the Philadelphia Union system. But one of the things, kind of a common theme for a lot of these guys, is very fitting with our state. We as a state, New Mexico, often feel as though we got a chip on our shoulder. We feel like we're overlooked at times. And these guys, many of them have a similar chip. You know, Kevon Frater felt as though he did not get the time he deserved in Phoenix. Santi Moore did not get the time he deserved in Bethlehem. Manny Padilla, one of our defensive players, was in the Houston Dynamo system and felt like he didn't get the look he deserved. Our head coach, Troy Lesane, he was the guy who interviewed for several different jobs around the USL, head coaching jobs, and was just turned down for several of them. So it's a kind of a chip on the shoulder mentality that I think has served us well thus far, and I think we'll continue to do so.
Good stuff. I guess on that note, let's talk about players to watch for. You mentioned a handful of guys. You know, how seriously is the club going to be taking U.S. Open Cup, given that they've had some schedule congestion? And then maybe who are some players who Rapids fans could really look out for? You know, I remember there at times in this tournament, especially when a USL team railhawks an MLS side, that leads to an audition for a player in USL to get on an MLS team. I remember a couple years ago, I don't remember whether it was Atlanta United or Orlando City, somebody got blown out by a Miami FC of the NASL, and Stefan Pino had a hat trick in that game, and then he joined Orlando City that next offseason. What style of play, how is New Mexico United going to take this game? Should we see the starters, and who should we be looking out for potentially trying to audition for making an MLS roster next year?
Well, and to that point as well, before I answer your question, that's already happened this year. There's one player, I don't remember his name, for Florida Soccer Soldiers. You know, after they beat Charlotte, he's now playing for Charlotte. It's 2 weeks later, and Charlotte signed him off of Florida Soccer Soldiers, who's
if
obviously an amateur
team.
If you
can't beat him, sign him, I guess.
Exactly. You take it. You take the talent wherever you find it. But to answer your question, as far as players to watch for, again, it's a lot of offensive firepower. Some of the players I've already mentioned, Kevon Frater, Devin Sandoval, Santi Moir, and Chris Weehan. Those are four big time goal scorers. Those are guys who teams have been doubling down on Moir a lot. He started off the season leading the league in goals for the first few games until Frater took over. And the thing is, if you go ahead and double down on Moir, you're leaving Frater open. If you try and double down on both of them, good luck containing Devin Sandoval and Chris Weehan. Those guys can score. Sandoval is more of a rebound guy, a garbage goal guy, which we absolutely adore here. It kind of fits the mentality in New Mexico. Santi is more your silky smooth guy, and Kevon, he can score from distance. He's a bit of a hybrid. He can score from distance, and he's got unbelievable speed. So it's a 3-4-headed monster up front. Again, where we've had some difficulty is defensively, but there are some really solid players on the defensive line. We just haven't had quite as much success gelling as a unit. But guys who come to mind on the defensive side of the ball are, as you mentioned, former Rapid Sam Hamilton, Josh Suggs, who will not be playing in this match more than likely, Manny Padilla back there as well, Justin Schmidt. So these are guys who are solid players, some of them former MLS players. But again, as a unit, there's been a little bit more of a learning curve as far as gelling on the defensive side of the ball. Now, you asked whether or not we will be playing the starters. If Saturday was an indication, yes. There were several starters who didn't necessarily get the start on Saturday, who didn't necessarily get the minutes that they typically would on Saturday. And so if that's an indication, I believe they'll be taking this very seriously. We had Coach Lesane on the podcast and asked him, you know, what he thought about the U.S. Open Cup, how seriously he would be taking it, and he seemed to indicate that they would be taking it very seriously, and they want to win the whole damn thing.
Oh, wow. Okay, then. I guess on that note, one thing that the Rapids try to make a big deal of, and they've hired several people in there to build out their sports science department, is taking care of home turf, particularly in being prepared to play at altitude. You know, on all their social media stuff, they use hashtag strength at altitude. In MLS play, that's obviously a big deal for them. But the Rapids historically and this season have struggled against teams who are conditioned to altitude. I remember a couple years ago when the Switchbacks made their first ever appearance at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. It was a 1-0 affair and very cagey. Fortress Sand Creek down in the Springs, it's at 7,100 feet altitude. Dick's is right at about a mile, and what it looks like is Albuquerque, I think, is pretty close to, and maybe at times hits a mile as well. And so the Rapids have struggled against RSL when they've been conditioned to altitude playing in Denver, and then also now historically against a USL side as well. How much has altitude and fitness been a factor in New Mexico United? United in terms of them playing at home and then also not fading against opponents away? And could that be a factor on Wednesday?
I wish you hadn't asked me this question because I don't think people realize it. That's the thing. You know, you think Colorado Springs, you think Denver. Yes, they're at elevation. You know, even Flagstaff, you know, stuff like that. It just immediately comes to mind. Yeah, those are at elevation. People don't realize that Albuquerque's at elevation until they get here. We're at the lowest point, we're at 5,300 feet. At the highest, we're at 6,700. People don't realize that. And so the conditioning, I think, it makes a huge difference. You have teams who come here and whether or not they expect it, you know, there's a thinner air. I moved out to New Mexico about 5 years ago, and I played soccer my entire life, and I was always an engine. I never had much skill, but I had an engine, and I ran, you know, till my legs fell off. Here, I can't do that as much, and I would imagine that the conditioning has made all the difference for a lot of these players. You know, they go up and they run in the mountains together. They go out and they train there, they exercise there, and I think the elevation makes a huge difference. And so I'm looking forward to seeing that kind of translate into Denver. We were kind of hoping to, not kind of, we were definitely hoping to host a match, an MLS club at our stadium, so that, you know, a team, whether it be, you know, Dallas or Houston or LA or whomever, can come, and again, maybe they don't realize there's elevation there. They don't realize that we're at 5,300 to 6,700 feet, and that makes a huge difference, I think, for our guys and for the opponent.
Yeah, that'll be something to watch for. Normally, historically, the Rapids have relied on those last 70 minutes with the opponent, you know, not having any energy left. You know, the last couple of home games they've had, they've scored after the 70th minute, and a lot of that has been attributed to the opponent really wilting as they get tired after, you know, over an hour playing at altitude. And that's something that you probably can't count on against New Mexico United, albeit a team that, you know, is in USL and in theory less talent. We could banter on about that for hours and hours and not get anywhere. And I'm not an MLS homer, so we're not going to do that. Last big question I have for you, David. Rapids fans are always very excited to see former Burgundy boys and see them kicking on. We've seen a couple of them depart in the last couple of years and find greener pastures and play well. And generally, as long as they're not scoring against the Rapids, fans are happy to see that. How is Sam Hamilton getting along with New Mexico United this season?
Sam is amazing. He is one of, you know, Troy Lesane put together a team full of guys that were high quality, high character guys, and Sam fits that mold fantastically. There was a situation earlier this year where one of our players, there's a terrible tragedy, lost a parent, and the team all came together, the supporters group, the fans, everybody came and kind of surrounded this player and supported them. Nobody more than Sam Hamilton. You know, the whole club wore these shirts that said, you know, we're united with this family. And after the match, he came over to me, I capo as well. He came over to me and handed me his shirt and said he wanted me to have it. I mean, that it just kind of shows you the quality of person that he is. And on the pitch, he's been fantastic as well. You know, he doesn't start every match, but when he does, you know, he's there. He makes an impact. I mean, you've seen him play. He's never been afraid to mix it up. He's a guy who will go through the ball, even if it means getting a knock himself. He's high quality, high character, and high intensity all the time, and I can't say enough good things about Sam Hamilton.
Absolutely, and doesn't shy away from contact in training when there's some banter going back and forth. So I'm sure there was an incident. The Rapids played Minnesota United over the weekend, and the Rapids have former player Sam Hamilton, and Sam Nicholson, and he said, you know, some of my old teammates had some banter for me, and I gave it to him a bit back, and then I gave it to him when I got the assist. And the game winner. So I'd love to be a fly on the wall, or I guess have a mic'd up approach to Sam Hamilton and some of the his former Rapids players. Might have to have a couple bleeps in there with some four letter words. David, I guess last question for you, since you are a guest, are there any shameless plugs that you have about people finding you on Twitter, or maybe Rapids fans potentially looking to go down to a game, how to get in touch, and do you have a prediction for the game on Wednesday?
Yeah, sure. If you guys want to get in touch with us via social media, Twitter is probably the best place to do it, rather, at TheCurseNM. That's where we put all of our stuff. We'd love to meet you guys out there. We are bringing a bus full of people to the match on Wednesday. We're packing a bus and we're coming in, and we look forward to a great match. And then, yeah, if you want to listen to our podcast, we are at The Curse Cast. It's in the Beautiful Game Network. And it's a lot of fun. We're having a blast with it. Obviously, this is our inaugural year, so it's kind of learn as we go, but we've had a lot of fun with it thus far. And then as far as predictions go, let's have some fun with this one. I'll say New Mexico United 3, Colorado Rapids 2.
Ooh, okay.
Calling on the cup set.
All right. I would not shock me at all. David Carl, president of the Curse Down supporters group for New Mexico United, thank you very much for joining me, sir. Listeners, we'll be right back with me and Mark finishing up the show. Welcome back, listeners, to Holding the High Line with Rabbi Red. Thank you to Curse President David Carl for joining me on the show tonight. Mark, any last thoughts on this game, and do you have a prediction on the match?
I think the Rapids are going to win the Open Cup this year, so clearly they have to win this first game. So I think they start a few more starters than you would have otherwise expected, but they put on some kids. Like, you're going to see – the big prediction, I would say, is that you're going to see both – Seb Anderson, and you're going to see Sam Vines start this one. But I also think that Sam Vines is probably our best left back now. And you're going to see a 3-0 drubbing.
Okay. I think it's going to be a little bit closer than that. I'm a little bit concerned in terms of what Connor Casey's going to do at center back and up the middle, given the limitations the team has as far as only having 5 internationals in the game day roster. Tommy Smith's international, Lalas Abubakar is international, Jack Price is international. That's 3 of the 5 right there just in the starting middle. So maybe we see a little bit of rotation. Maybe Kofi Opare gets into the game. Maybe an Axel Schuberg or some rotation in there. So I'm a little concerned in terms of how the team's going to be defensively up the middle. And as I spoke about with David, that's the main area of strength for New Mexico. And then combine that with New Mexico being conditioned to altitude, that normally USL teams, you know, come here. And like you said, Mark, you know, they fade after the 70th minute having to play at altitude. But since right. This team is going to be conditioned to altitude and they just had 2 games recently at Colorado Springs, it's not going to be anything they're not familiar with. They're used to playing that size of a pitch as well for their road games. Isotope Park, not so much. So I think they're going to be in it from the 70th minute on. I think it'll go to extra time, but I like Rapids 2-1. I think, you know, Connor Casey's been an absolute magician with his substitutions. He's going to pick some guy who's going to come on when the Rapids need somebody to make a play. That player is going to make the impact, and that's going to be the difference in the game that leads to the Rapids' second goal and ultimately the game-winning goal. Any other closing thoughts, Mark, or shall we get out of here?
It would have been nice to have seen Nicky Jackson get a chance to get called back up. I don't know if you saw over the weekend, but he had a cheeky back heel and run on that was just fantastic. I mean, he just received the ball and flicked it around the back of his own guy. Just one of those moves that you usually see, you know, on a highlight film. But, you know, like, it'll be interesting to see whether Shinyashiki starts up top and how he attacks the game.
Oh, absolutely. Really curious to see. And then especially with Sam Hamilton coming back, playing against, you know, some of his former DU friends, and then also playing against, you know, the Rapids. Maybe won't be able to stick it to Anthony Hudson because he's not there anymore. But, you know, like Sam Nicholson had a nice comment post-game over the weekend, where he said, you know, playing against some of his old Minnesota United players, you know, they had a bit of chatter for me in the ear, and then I gave it to him right back, and then I guess we gave it to him on the scoreboard in the end. So, you know, it'll be fun to see what Sam Hamilton's doing against his former buddy, and I know, you know, he and Andre Shinyashiki have to know each other pretty well from their time at DU, so that should be fun, especially if they both start, you know, against each other. With that,
as my cross-country coach used to say, revenge is a dish best served cold.
Yes, listeners, thank you very much. You can follow us on Twitter @soccer_rabbi, @LWSMattPollard. Get us on the Twitter sphere @Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions using the #AskHTHL. If you got something longer than 280 characters or want to get in touch in a different way, hit us up @Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. DenverPost.com /HTHL, all lowercase for a special deal on all of their digital content, and Patreon.com /Rapids96Podcast. If you like us enough and you think that we bring monetary value to your lives and your enjoyment of the Colorado Rapids. With that, listeners, thank you much for joining us. Might not have a show next week just with Gold Cup and everything, but in any case, we'll see you in the not too distant future. Definitely talking about the Rapids as they head into the second half of the season, with probably some banter about the various things going on with the national teams, you know, fire, fury, and disappointment on the case of the men's side, and hopefully another trophy at the end of the day for our ladies playing in France. We'll see you next time, folks.
Peace.